Please join me in the Old Testament reading, 2 Kings, chapter 2, verses 1 through 11, on page 570. When the Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven in a whirlwind, Elijah were on their way from Gilgal. Elijah said to Elijah, "Stay here. The Lord has sent me to Bethel." But Elijah said, "As surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you." So they went down to Bethel. The company of prophets at Bethel came out to Elijah and asked, "Do you know that the Lord is going to take your master from you today?" "Yes, I know. So be quiet." And Elijah said to him, "Stay here. Elijah, the Lord has sent me to Jericho." And he replied, "As surely as the Lord lives and you live, I will not leave you." So they went to Jericho. The company of prophets at Jericho went up to Elijah and asked him, "Do you know that the Lord is going to take your master from you today?" "Yes, I know," he replied, "so be quiet." Then Elijah said to him, "Stay here. The Lord has sent me to the Jordan." And he replied, "As surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you." So the two of them walked on. 50 men from the company of prophets went and stood at a distance facing the place where Elijah had stopped at the Jordan. Elijah took his cloak, rolled it up, and struck the water with it. The water divided to the right and to the left, and the two of them walked on dry ground. When they had crossed, Elijah said to Elijah, "Tell me what I can do for you before I am taken from you. Let me insert a double portion of your spear." Elijah replied, You have asked a difficult thing." Elijah said, "Yet if you see me when I am taken from you, it will be yours, otherwise it will not." As they were walking along and talking together, suddenly a chariot of fire and horses of fire appeared and separated the two of them, and Elijah went up to heaven in a whirlwind. Elijah saw this and cried out, "My father, my father!" The chariots and the horsemen of Elijah then picked up Elijah's cloak and that had fallen from him and went back and stood water with it. "Where now is the Lord, the God of Elijah?" he had asked. When he struck the water with it divided to the right and to the left, and he had crossed over. Now, a company of prophets from Jericho who were watching said, "The spirit of Elijah rests on Elijah." And they went to meet him and bowed to the ground before him. The word of God for the people of God.
So today we meet Elijah at the end of his ministry. He is not only going to retire, he is going to be taken up into heaven. And we know this is the end because the writer of 2 Kings tells us at the very beginning of chapter 2 in 2 Kings, this is what's about to happen. But also at every stop, Elijah and Elisha that they make, Bethel, Jericho, Jordan, the faithful prophets parrot the same refrain back to Elisha. "Do you know that today the Lord will take your master away from you?" It is time for Elijah, who we have been studying all these weeks, to ride off into the sunset, to put his face on the Mount Rushmore of prophets. He is ready to go, but he has a problem. He has a real problem. He has a shadow. Y'all know what a shadow is? Shadows that person who you were in a conversation with and you had ended it 10 minutes ago, and they still thought you were having a conversation despite you walking into another room. hiding. Oh, they're still there. Over here, they're still talking to you. That person that won't leave you. That's what's happening with Elisha right now. He is Elijah's shadow. He is not going to leave Elijah's side. Why? Because he needs something. He needs something from Elijah before Elijah can be taken up into heaven. Despite Elijah's best efforts to get rid of him, to say, hey, you know, God's called me over here. How about you stay right where we are now? And I'm just going to go. Oh, no, you're not going anywhere. I'm coming with you. So this is what he needs. There is something that he needs before he takes the mantle of Elijah for good. And so this persistence and this stubbornness we see here serves a purpose. You'll notice as Landon read, it was just this constant refrain, right? It was just like, he goes here, the prophets tell him this, he doesn't go, he doesn't leave him. He goes here, he doesn't leave him, the prophets talk to him. He just keeps staying with him. And so after this roundabout journey through Gilgal, Bethel, Jericho, and finally across the Jordan, this holy place where Moses led the Hebrew people through, the place where Moses took his last breath, Elijah turns to Elisha and asks him, "Tell me what I may do for you before I am taken from you. What do you need from me?" And Elisha is clear, "I need your inheritance." That is what this double portion conversation is all about. When he gets across the Jordan, he says, "Give me a double portion of what you have." And it's not like Elisha wants to be doubly as powerful as Elijah. No, this double portion is inheritance language. It's legal language. It's a legal term regarding the right of the firstborn to inherit 2/3 of the father's estate. Elisha wanted to be Elijah's principal heir, the inheritor of his power, his status, his prophetic witness, his mantle. And so this is what's at stake in this passage. Will the torch be passed to Elisha just as Moses passed the torch to Joshua? Can a new generation continue the work of a previous generation? What does it take to pass the torch successfully to those who are coming after you? Because this is not about Elijah being carried up to heaven. That's not exactly what this passage is about. It's about knowing when to pick up and put down. When to say yes and when to say no. Are we able to take the torch when we are called? And are we able to pass it on when we're called to something new? So I told the kids about the Olympics that are coming up in 2016. And if you can avoid the mosquitoes with the Zika virus enough, they're actually going to have a few games, right? One of the games they're going to have is the 4x100, right? And that's the game, that's the race that they have different racers at different parts of the oval, right, set up. And the first racer has the baton and runs their little section of the race and then passes the baton on for the next person, right, to run their section of the race. Now, if you watch this, you would think, oh, this is, you know, it shouldn't be too hard, right? All you're doing is passing a baton. But it turns out that in the 4x100, passing the baton is the hardest part. It's not the running. These are all great runners. How do you successfully pass the baton to the person who you're running up to? And so this part is really difficult. So coaches will practice. They'll have the kids, they'll have the racers or the kids, whoever they are, practice just passing a baton so that they know where to place it in their hand and how to grab it. And this becomes a really important skill in this kind of race. It's very important to be able to pass the baton right. And so as people of faith, I think we need to become experts like these runners, careful about how we are passing the torch to one another so that that person who comes after us can actually continue the race. Now, there are a couple ways you can fail at passing the torch, right? The first one is you're running up to the person and you just drop it and you don't even bother passing to the next one. You just drop it. Not handing the torch over at all means that the person who's coming after you can't race at all. It's done. The race is over. But it also means you don't trust anybody else but yourself to get it done. You fully believe in the saying, if you want it done right, you think that no one else can do it as well as you can. So you never even bother handing the torch on because they're not going to do it as good as I can. By taking this technique, you make it impossible for anyone else to continue the race. And not by not trusting in the abilities of the rest of your team, you fail to pass on the knowledge you have acquired and force the next person to have to start all over from the beginning. It's a selfish attitude that hurts the team instead of helping it. Knowledge needs to be passed, not kept in a lockbox for no one to have. Second, the other kind of dangerous way of passing the torch is that you pass the torch in a way that the next person is set up for failure. We're passing the torch the wrong way, causing them to drop it. Sometimes we set people up to fail. Maybe we're not as truthful as we should be. Maybe we leave out important details, or I think most importantly, probably for the most of us, we're just not interested in taking the time to explain the ins and outs because we have a lot of other things to worry about. We're too busy. And so we're not as intentional as we should be. And for whatever reason we do it, passing the torch the wrong way hurts us as a church because it puts the next person at a disadvantage, unable to draw on your past experiences or mistakes. So whatever we do, remember that we are called to pass the torch successfully. And when we do that, we do two things. First, we put the torch right into the hands of those who are coming after you. You place it with intentionality, not in dropping it, not putting it so that they can't have it, but giving it to them in the right way. Elisha received the mantle from Elijah as he ascended into heaven, dropped it right in front of him to pick up. Be just as willing to empower others as you are willing to take power. Second, and this goes back to the 4x100 race. So when they're running the race, and the person is coming up on the person who's going to hand off the baton to, you will know that the person who is going to be handing off also starts running, right? So that for a period of time, the two people are running exactly the same speed so that the baton can be handed off successfully and that there's no momentum lost. When you're handing off the torch, don't just hand off the torch and just jump back and disappear. Run with that person for a little while so that they may learn from you, so that they may be educated and helped and know how to carry this torch successfully. That is a very important aspect of what happens for us. And so, like I stated last week, make the effort to mentor the next person, being honest, being open about their responsibilities, the ins and outs of the position that they are assuming. They can benefit from you. They can benefit from your experience. Don't waste it by keeping it to yourself. So more importantly, out of all of this, we must remember that God has the first move. God called Moses, God called Joshua, God called Elijah, and God called Elisha. As people of faith, we can only prepare for the race. God starts the race. So when it is time to lay down the torch, you'll know when it's time. Do it and set the stage for those who are coming after you. And I'm not asking you to do it because I'm sick of you or you're. Do it because sometimes you need to put down the torch so that you can have another torch handed to you. You may be exhausted from the ministry that you're doing right now, but you may find energy in another place. This is about picking up and putting down. It's not about dying and living. This is about learning when to pass it and help those who come and know when to take it up. So in this world of constant and consistent change, I ask you today to become experts in passing the torch. So everybody, stand up. Go ahead, stand up. And I want you to pass your torch at least twice to somebody in this sanctuary. Go for it. Come on.